which is important, we think. So we had to make a decision. What do we do now? Do we expand? Bigger barns, more cows, more quota, bigger debt load, or should we diversify? So after, at some point in time, we decided eventually that we would look into diversification. So we decided to do value added. And it's always good when you do value added to work with something that you actually know. So we know the dairy industry. And being kind of a product of the 70s, like, let's just do everything from scratch kind of person, who can relate? I didn't do macrame things, but, you know. did a lot of things from scratch, you know. And so that was, we were kind of well positioned to do that. I lived in Switzerland for 10 years, and I was able there to be introduced to cheese making. So we looked at our situation. What our situation was at that point in time that the processing industry requested less butterfat in the milk in response to the public's desire for lower butterfat in their products. So you all know about the 0% yogurt kind of thing. Yes, so exactly. So there we were producing 4% plus butterfat being docked on our paycheck and not one man wondering what to do. So we decided to diversify. Of course, we want fat for our cheese making. We all know that there's no flavor if there's no fat. So we diversified, changed actually the way we farm in the sense that we kind of went, my husband will say, went back in time a bit. He had always grazed our cows, but we made a point of changing. We don't raise any, we don't feed grass silage at all. We don't use any antibiotics or, which, you know, hormone. I mean, if we have a really sick cow, then of course that cow needs to be treated depending on whatever. But you all know there's no hormones anyway in Canadian milk, which is something that we, in our position, found out. We kind of have a mandate as an educator of the public, because unfortunately a lot of public, and you have that as well, a lot of the public automatically and immediately assumes there's hormones in their milk or their food. They just assume that. And maybe they have good reason to, but in Canadian milk, we know that that's not the case. Monsanto was not able to get their dairy hormone into Canada, thankfully. So that doesn't happen here. Anyway, we changed our breeds from the production type Holstein cow to the older breeds, Guernsey and Brown Swiss. The reason for that is the flavor of the milk and also the amount of solids in the milk, because of cheesemakers, they need to take the solids out. So basically cheese is getting the solids out of the milk. So traditionally, a subsistence level farmer or a family in the medieval times, Middle Ages, they had a little plot and they would have a cow and a pig, right? So the cow would produce the milk in the spring and the summer, and then in the fall there would be no milk. However, in the summer when there was a large flush of milk, they would have been making cheese and keeping that in the cellar. So their family would always have dairy for the winter as well. So it's just very traditional. Basically, cheese is getting the solids out of the milk to preserve it for the future. That's all it is. But we kind of custom design our milk in that we have different breeds of cows. The Guernsey and the Brown Swiss cow have, I don't know if you know, there are two different kinds of protein in dairy, the A1 and A2 protein. They're finding a lot of allergy to dairy is due to the A1 protein, because it is the protein usually that people have allergies to. The A2 protein is more of an original, if you want to say, ur protein type that's in the cow. These breeds of cows have not been developed as much as the more modern production type breeds. So their milk is, it's not right to say it's healthier, but it's more traditional. Okay, so we have actually started bottling our milk and have huge response to the bottled milk. For one thing, it's high in natural vitamin D. We don't have to add vitamin D, synthetic, so it's high in natural vitamin D. And we don't homogenize, so the cream goes to the top. Plus, the Guernsey has a very high beta-carotene level in their milk, so it's very creamy and yellow. So we're getting that old-fashioned, everyone's having this. We get emails from people that have this, like, oh my goodness, I'm in my grandmother's kitchen kind of response, which is great, because that's what we want. We're a small traditional farm, and we believe in good quality food. We don't think that anyone should be having to eat low quality food. So that's what we produce. We have a small hands-on, handmade cheese-making facility. We don't use big machinery, pumps, and equipment to process our cheese. So with milk, the more it's handled, the more it's dealt with, the more the fat breaks down. So when you take your homogenized milk and you put it on the, and you say your teenage child forgets to put it in the fridge and puts it in the cupboard, and then you go there the next day and go, oh my gosh, this milk isn't sour, is it? It's actually rotten because it's rancid, because the fat has been destroyed by the process of homogenization, which then breaks down. If you imagine a fat globule as a little balloon, it breaks down that protective coating, and then it's open to attack from environmental, you know, bacteria that specifically attack fat. Viruses in the environment, that's what the world does, break things down. So the fat starts to be changed and becomes rancid. So homogenized milk is a different product than milk, in my opinion. Whole milk, where the fat hasn't been damaged, has much better flavor. So you can try some. Actually, I should bring up some of our milk. That's what I'll do now that I've bragged about it. But basically, as far as cheese making goes as well, hand managing of the cheese is gentle. That keeps the quality in the milk and in the cheese. So that translates directly into the flavor that you experience on your at your table, right? So that's what we do now. We do notice that there's increasing demand constantly for local and quality foods, as you will know. You probably yourself go out and try to choose local quality foods over industrially produced imported stuff. And bravo, good for you, because farmers need to make it. And if they don't sell the product, they can't make it. For instance, we know, and you probably have heard in your position, of the effect on the, at least we know about the BC dairy industry. Now that the dollar, the American dollar, is at in an advantageous position for Canadians to go buy their milk over the line. So just go one day and sit in Bellingham and Linden and watch the people load up their cars with American milk. It's tragic. What can you do? I know people have a budget, but the thing is, we have to produce the milk at Canadian prices. We can't produce it. We just visited an American producer a couple of days ago because we're looking for more Guernsey cows, and he said he wishes the border would move 2 miles south and include him in Canada, because he said for the American farmer it is absolutely impossible right now. They can't do it. He said it in 2008, they were thinking by 2013 they would have their debt paid off. He's 66 years old. He said they haven't made one move on their debt since 2008. And then they're, of course, in a different position than we are with supply management, and that's something I'm assuming you all know about and how that works. So you're not the usual kind of person that asks why they can't buy milk directly from a farmer, right? Does anyone have that question? No. Okay. That being said, does anyone have a question before we set up some cheese?
Have you got any media attention because of, we should be interested in one or larger increase?
There's always been an interest in raw milk cheeses. There's a certain sector of the public that believes that it tastes better if it's raw milk, and some that don't notice a difference. There are those that are hoping it's not raw milk. So there's always something. So we have always had people ask if we make any raw milk cheeses, and if we say no, then they walk away and they don't buy cheese. Then there are those that go, oh, thank goodness. So there's always, that is a topic. And we personally, at this point in time, we don't make raw milk cheeses because we have just a small facility, and we make, our economic concept was, or our idea was, that our shop would sell only our cheeses and we would have a variety, so that you would love cheddar, you would love brie, you would love something else, so we would have a variety. So the law is a cheese has to be processed separately from pasteurized. If it's going to be raw milk, has to be processed separately, separate days, separate. You can do it in the same facility, but every bit of equipment has to be scrubbed down, cleaned after the raw milk use. We can't use the same trolley to move the cheese out and then use the pasteurized cheese. Has to be ripened separately. So logistically, it's not easy for us to do that. And we also produce two or three kinds of cheese in a day. So today we'll say, for instance, we'll make cheddar and brie and a fresh cheese. So that fresh cheese is going to be consumed in a few days, so we wouldn't be allowed to sell that as raw milk cheese. the cheddar, we could ripen for a year or whatever, and then that would be fine, but we can't do it together. So logistically, it's never worked for us. And I mean, I personally, we drink our raw milk, obviously. We have no issues with that. But that being said, I don't think I would drink my neighbor's raw milk. I'm not saying their milk isn't good. I'm just saying we need to know the source. We need to know all the, you know. So a lot of people come in and go, well, I want raw milk. And we're going, why can't I have raw milk? And you know, this is a story. And I just say, you know, raw milk, you have to remember, it is a high risk food for good reason. It's, milk is perfect for growing bacteria. Absolutely perfect. That's why it makes good cheese, because that's what cheese is. It's lactic bacteria growing in the milk. It's got a great source of sugars and protein. So it's perfect for that. So if there's some slip up, there could be E. coli, as we know, Staph aureus, Listeria, all kinds of baddies in the milk, because a cow lives in a barn, lies on her teats, lies in her manure, and it, I mean, there could be something. So there's always that. But that being said, there's a lot of raw milk consumed in the world with no adverse effects, obviously. Inside the cow, it's a pure food, right? Outside the cow, it depends on the environment. So we do have requests for raw milk cheeses. We did actually make a batch of raw milk cheddar last January. We made a couple of batches, so we got like a couple of dozen of raw milk cheddar wheels on our shelves, separate from everything else, and we haven't opened them yet. We just want to do our own test to see, does this taste way better than our pasteurized cheddar? So we are going to see. Any other questions? I hope, does that help?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
Okay, any other questions?
Deborah, can you tell me a little bit about your background as a cheesemaker? And you're one of 12 people in Canada and the United States.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm excited because I just was in Aix-en-Provence because our youngest daughter is going to school there. So I was doing this pilgrimage in Spain. And then when I came home, I went to visit her because she just arrived there. And we were walking down the street and we said, let's just buy some cheese and bread, because obviously everywhere we go, we buy cheese. And so we went into this little shop, and the little, what do you call it, plaque on the wall was the same guild as me. And so I was all excited. And we had a good chat, and he's my guild brother, he's my confrère. But really, I was nominated to become a member of the guild of Fromagère de Saint-Augustin. So I have my own patron saint, which is quite cool. I never thought I'd have that. But there's a French cheesemaking guild, which acknowledges and recognizes those who further the interest in quality artisan cheese. So as a cheesemaker or a cheesemonger or as someone in the marketing business who promotes cheese, they're recognized. And it was a very medieval experience. They come with long brown robes and fur around their hat and have a medal. But it's very good, too, because I get information from the cheesemaking industry. And I get a magazine from France that is very pertinent to what I do. So everything in there is very helpful, addresses a lot. And one of the things we are faced with in North America is the lack of understanding of what cheese is, lack of experience, which is fine. But as you know, and you probably all grew up eating cheddar and maybe Velveeta even, and you know, mozzarella is, you know,
cheese whiz.
Cheese whiz, yeah. My mother has cheese whiz. I'm like, no! But you know, that's our experience. What can we do? The whole industry changed when it moved from Europe to North America in the, you know, last century, became locally industrialized and distributed. So there's not that history of farmstead cheesemaking that there is in Europe, and mostly Europe and Eastern Europe, not so much Asia at all. There's no real large consumption of milk except for India. But we don't have that history like they do in Europe. So there's not that appreciation and understanding. So we just had somebody come to the market where we sell cheese the other day, had brought an overripe Brie. So Brie is a natural rind cheese. It has mold on the outside. What the mold does is digest protein and digest fat. That's why it becomes runny inside. As that process progresses, it changes the chemistry of the cheese and it can become ammoniated and overripe, which you might have tasted. And it becomes mottly brown with age on the outside. Well, this person actually attacked my daughter at the market, accused her of having huge microbiology problems in our cheese in light of what just happened in Armstrong. Hello? How inappropriate is that? And it demanded that these cheeses, one of them was a blue cheese, which is a natural blue rind. And he said, I was freaked out when I opened this cheese, and I want these cheese tested, and I want them to go to the lab, and I want the results. He was a public health inspector with no knowledge of cheese. So my daughter was like in a state, but she handled it really well. I left a message on this machine, and he sent the cheese back. It simply, he demanded it be sampled, and he get the results of the lab. He had it in his fridge for 2 weeks. So how would I get any kind of accurate result out of anything should I decide? You know what I mean? I'm just mentioning this because there's unfortunately a lack of knowledge about cheese, and we find that we're doing a lot of educating, which is good. So there's a growing demand for artisan local cheese. Any other questions? So what we do here, we transform our own milk. We don't get it from any other farmer because we, like I said, we kind of custom design the milk for flavor and for ingredients in the milk components, which means we don't manipulate the cows in any way except feed them naturally. We raise our own organic alfalfa, and we're just putting up a mill so we can do our own grain. We're actually not feeding corn silage. This is the first time this year that we're not feeding corn silage, and my husband's a little bit nervous because as a dairy farmer they've always done corn silage, so he's working to replace that in the cow's diet. And so far we're thrilled because the milk is so sweet. We're feeding corn kernel, like dry kernel, and a blend of other things. And yeah, you can ask him later. I know he's rushing around doing a few things, but if you have time to talk to him about that, if you're interested. But that's what we do. So we make a variety of cheeses from cow and goat milk. We didn't start with goats because, I mean, what's that? No? But then we had chefs and people coming like, do you make goat cheese? So we bought a little goat milk from another producer. Then we had to get some more. Then we asked another producer who couldn't get it to us because it wasn't enough. Then we bought goats and had that person milk them and had them transport the milk over. And it was just getting cumbersome. And I said to my husband, I think we're going to have to milk goats. So we started out with doing like 100 to 200 liters. I think 200 liters or 250 liters every 2 weeks. Now we do almost 1,500 liters a week in goat milk only. So we started out small. I have a recipe for 60 liters of brie. And my girls now, we make 400 to 600 liters a week. And we're just little, right? And that is little. But that's the demand has increased. So that's a good thing. That's a good thing that people are supporting local and that they're acknowledging local farmers, and that's wonderful.
What are your top markets?
We go to Vancouver, to the Vancouver Farmers Market. We go to Trout Lake in the summer and the Nat Bailey Stadium Market in the winter. We also go to the Ladner, which is more of an event market, and Steveston in front of the cannery there, which are both kind of event markets. We also do one in Langley weekly, which is a very good market for us. A lot of local people coming to buy their groceries. They do support that really well. This is the first year we're going to be doing markets right through this season. This is our cheese market truck right here. 1 year I did a farmer's market where I lugged everything, fridges and everything, into a hallway and froze to death all day, and then lugged it back, got home and said, it's killing me, I can't do this. And I know from Europe, which many of you may have done, visited markets in Europe where there's a truck, opens a side, there's all the cheese, you choose what you want. I said, that's what we need. Well, there's no such vehicle in North America, I'm just letting you know. So we found this service truck and we had it refitted into a cheese market truck. So inside there's a cheese cooler, you just lift up the side. I just parked it in that position so that we actually can't lift up the side, but maybe I could if you're interested, we could do that later. But it's perfect because now it's public health inspector is happy because it's all cold and in a cooler, people can't touch it. And we're happy because we have to cut and wrap every little piece and then, you know, take it back and whatever. So we have a sink in there and it's wonderful. So that works really well. And we love having that interaction with our customers. It's wonderful. Yeah. So I just brought a couple of kinds of cheese for you to try today, just so you get a variety. I know you're not here to have breakfast, but... Okay. Oh, I did write a book. This is the second edition. I was actually asked by the publisher to write this book, I guess, in 2008. And they came to the farm, and my husband had met him in Vancouver when he was dropping cheese off at a shop. And George got it mixed up. He said, there's this person who wants to write a book and they want to talk to you about cheese. I'm like, well, I'll get your, like, this is my day off. I want to have Sunday afternoon off. So, and he said, aren't you going to talk to these people? I'm like, okay. And he said, well, they want you to write the book. I'm like, oh, well, that's a different story. So I had a chat with him and I said, well, who would buy this book? Like, are you serious? Who wants to make cheese at home? That's too much. But he said, well, I really believe it'll work. And so I told him actually to go away and think about it. And I would think about it. So then I said, okay, I wrote the book. It's selling like crazy. I just went to Europe on my royalties. Isn't that wonderful? And there's a second edition, so you can have a look through it if you want. There's some pictures in the second edition, and there are troubleshooting and lots of recipes. One good thing, I can speak a couple of different languages, so I can research in different countries for different types of cheese, because they wanted 200 kinds of cheese. There are really only 5 kinds of cheese. Okay, so here we have some of our aged cheddar. I think it's about a year old for you to try. I put toothpicks out if you want to use your hands. Don't want to use your hands. There's also some Chèvre here, which is just fresh goat cheese. So I just got some to kind of do the spectrum. Hard aged cheese, fresh spreadable cheese. And I have some of our own honey from our own beehives right here to try on the Chèvre, which is delicious. Some local crackers, artisan, a bakery in Agassiz that does beautiful crackers. We get those from them. And there's some brie here. I do have more inside if it's not enough. But I wanted you to see our cheddar. That is a 2-year-old cheddar wheel. We make them and cloth bandage them. So I think there are 3 producers in Canada that cloth bandage cheddar. That's the traditional way. So when you hear the word cheesecloth, it wasn't meant to strain things. It wasn't meant to wash the windows. It's meant to wrap cheddar. That's what it's for. So this cheddar is actually wrapped in cloth, smeared with lard, and it's been aging in our cooler for, in our cave, for 2 years. It's since November, so it's almost 2 years. No, it's out in the public. I know. I should invite him here. I'm sorry, I don't mean to gossip, but I just thought it's interesting that there's, even in that area, there's so little knowledge of artisan cheese, which is kind of discouraging, you know, because really it was an overripe breed, that is all. And I mean, we have a lab test to show him if he's interested, but anyway, so you can help yourself. I'll go back here if you have any further questions.